This past April, the Reverend Wayne Arneson delivered a sermon here entitled, Making It Up. Wayne shared with us four of his favorite metaphors about the way we improvise our lives. And then Wayne asked us to consider whether we saw our own lives as a highway, a bird's nest, a jazz tune, or a dinner party. Now, like any great sermon, it gave me a lot to think about, and I immediately felt a kinship with the bird's nest metaphor. Yes, that was and is my life, taking my skills as a musician and educator and creating a career nest built from whatever opportunity came my way. I've been a soloist and ensemble performer, playing from both classical and pop repertoires, meaning I've played in rock bands. I've taught in public school classrooms at every level from kindergarten to college. I've taught in my own private studio. I've directed choirs and conducted pit bands, created and led workshops, and I even tried my hand as a lounge pianist, the only job I was ever fired from, by the way. And no, I'm neither bitter nor sorry. A bird's nest, indeed. Every opportunity improvised and woven together, my skills broadened and honed at every turn. But Wayne's take on jazz improvisation also grabbed my attention, but for a different reason. Improvising at the piano is a skill that I've treasured most of my life, and that skill has been applied to a long list of genres, but jazz is not one of them. I may have faked it on occasion, but I'm certainly not a jazz pianist. It came to me that I knew very little about music improvisation as an art. I was familiar with it in relation to soloing in jazz and rock and the blues, and the use of improvisation in Baroque and Indian classical music was not unknown to me, but only in the vaguest terms. There was a time even when I dabbled in free improvisation as an undergraduate. And my exploration into solo improv at the piano these many years was yet another example of an obviously rich and diverse art form. I felt an urge to begin filling in the gaps in my knowledge about improvisation. Upon the suggestion from a colleague, I purchased and read Improvisation, Its Nature and Practice in Music by Derek Bailey. Now, Bailey was a British-born guitarist who was a pioneer in the free improvisation movement. This movement, whose followers come from every music genre imaginable, embraces the notion that music can be improvised with no preconceptions regarding tonality, meter, style, or form. The music is really nothing like what you're hearing today in this service. To these ears, much of what constitutes free improvisation is it turns brilliant, confounding, and annoying. But Bailey's book was a very engaging read to me. Its scope was broad. It began with a concise description of the use of improvisation in Indian classical music, whose history goes back thousands of years. And the book then continues chronologically, looking at improvisation as it happens in flamenco, Baroque music, church and organ music, rock, jazz, and finally free improvisation itself. It's pretty well known that during the Baroque period, 1600 to 1750, for those of you keeping score, improvisation was an essential component of the genre. After 1750, the practice faded and disappeared until around the 1950s, speaking mostly in terms of Western music. As I dug into this book by Bailey, I imagined reading quotes from documents dating from the Baroque era, shedding light on the philosophies of improvisation, aspects of technique, and the training necessary to cultivate this art. I was searching for concrete descriptions of this practice long lost. What I found instead were descriptions of improvisation in the most abstract of terms. In fact, this was true of nearly every chapter of the book. From the beginning to end, a common theme emerges within this book that to begin to describe what happens as music is created spontaneously is to misunderstand the process from the very start. It appears to defy description in the written word, like what Dan said. I can relate to this. I've been asked numerous times, how do you do that? And I can't answer without immediately sliding into the abstract. I pick a place to start and I just keep on going. One note leads to the next. The stuff just bubbles out from me. I really, truly can't explain it. But this isn't to say, however, that improvisation is some sort of nebulous thing that magically appears in some musicians. There are countless stories from the legends of blues, jazz, and rock who describe in their formative years watching and learning from other musicians, gleaning certain licks or an unusual technique in order to augment their own budding prowess. Through the centuries, many musicians have honed their ability to improvise by studying the greats in their field. Bailey tells us that common knowledge dictates that you find a master to study, absorb his or her skills through practiced imitation, and then gradually develop your own unique voice from that foundation. Countless students of bebop have done this with recordings of Charlie Parker, painstakingly transcribing his blistering solos so that they could be practiced at first slowly and then faster and faster until eventually mastered. So then had students of classical Indian music and flamenco, without the benefits of recording, of course. And so the book held no secrets regarding the teaching of improvisation. Instead, it helped me realize that my own sense of the art as something beyond words is indeed valid. I want to share a lot more of Bailey's book and how we might find parallels between the art of improvisation and life as improvisation. But before we do that, I'm going to ask Dan to join me at the piano so that we can create some spontaneous music together. This is not something with which I've had a lot of experience beyond as an undergraduate, and that was a long time ago, and there may have been drugs involved. And in terms of experience with this kind of music, I am guessing that Dan is in the same boat. In regards to experience, never mind. That came out wrong. You can well imagine that improvising alone and improvising with others are two different creatures. This is something Bailey explores rather extensively in his book as he describes his own transition from creating free improvisation as part of an ensemble to becoming a solo artist in the same vein. The pluses and minuses of each situation to me are clear. Being in control as opposed to being at the mercy of others. Enjoying the interplay between musicians versus performing within a vacuum. But I really don't care about any of that right now. I just want to see what happens next. Don't you?
why ever practice, really? Thank you. Our second reading actually comes from the book that Jay has been referencing. So this is a short reading by Derek Bailey. So in the non-improviser, particularly the straight classical trained player, there is no sign of the instrumental impulse. One reason why the standard Western instrumental training produces non-improvisers, and it doesn't just produce violinists, pianists, cellists, etc., it produces specifically non-improvisers, musicians rendered incapable of attempting improvisation, is that it not only does it teach us how to play an instrument, it teaches that the creation of music is a separate activity from playing the instrument. So in other words, learning how to create music is a process totally divorced from playing an instrument. Music for the instrumentalist is a set of written symbols which he or she interprets as best he or she can. They, the symbols, are the music, and the person who wrote them, the composer, is the music maker. The instrument is the medium through which the composer finally transmits his or her ideas. The instrumentalist is not required to make music. He can assist with his interpretation, perhaps, but judging from most reported remarks on the subject, composers prefer the instrumentalist to limit his contribution to providing the instrument, keeping it in tune, and being able to use it to carry out, as accurately as possible, any instruction which might be given to him. The improviser's view of the instrument is totally different.
There were a lot of gems to find in Bailey's book. One quote from the French composer François Couperin, Baroque, jumped out at me. What we write is different from what we play. My mind immediately flashed back to a memory from my childhood. I was 11 years old and was trying to create a score for a piano piece I had written entitled, interestingly enough, Guitar. Bear with me. Some context. I started piano lessons when I was 8 years old, and I started composing a couple of months after that. I had a teacher who was very supportive of my creative side, and Mrs. Heppola patiently guided me through the rather torturous process of notating my compositions. Now, a sidebar within a sidebar. You have to understand this is absolutely a tortuous process in the beginning. Nothing will kill the creative spark in a young budding composer faster than insisting that that student figure out the correct time signature of a piece that they've written. I know this from personal experience with my own students. Mrs. Heppola was a saint. I started playing, as I said, when I was 8, but I wasn't improvising at the piano until I was maybe 10. I really don't remember. So the nature of the compositions that I was creating after I began improvising was quite different from the nature of those I had been producing when I was first starting to play. This I remember. Now, since guitar was born out of improvisation, every time I played it, it was a little different. Sometimes it was longer. Sometimes it was very short. Sometimes I mixed the sections around a bit. There was even a part in the middle where I, for lack of a better term, played a solo. I had decided that I wanted to enter this piece into a student composition competition, and I was racked with indecision as to how to commit it to paper. Mrs. Heppola calmly explained that if I wanted to make a score of guitar, I would have to make some very hard choices. And she also said that perhaps this was not a composition at all, but in fact, an improvisation and should exist solely as such. But that teaching moment was lost on me. I had created this cool piece. I wanted to write it down to preserve for all times. And so I did. The judges found my piece confusing, and it earned no prize. And after I had created the score, I stopped playing guitar as an improvisation and only as a composition. And then, soon after, I stopped playing it altogether. The piece was somehow spoiled for me. Now, after that experience, I remember struggling with a few more pieces that were cut from the same cloth and trying to create scores for them. And then I happily abandoned the style and began exploring bitonality and dissonance as I discovered my love for Bartok. Luckily, I did not abandon improvisation. But what a shame that I'd missed the significance of that teaching moment. For Bailey tells us that the arts of improvisation and composition are at odds with each other. On one level, it's easy to see why. The very nature of spontaneous music defies notation. Improvisation is music of the moment. It captures what the improviser is feeling at that moment. These feelings are not regulated to just what's in the musician's heart and mind, however. External forces are at play as well. So by extension, the other musicians, the audience, the weather, the political climate, the light show, the smells of sweat, incense, and other controlled substances, these all contribute to the moment when improvisation occurs. It is made and experienced in the moment. And when that singular moment has passed, it and the music are gone forever. What would be the point of notating it? Going back to our students busily transcribing solos, it's important to know that while such an exercise could reap some rewards, there is something lost in the process. There is a sense of time and place that is a key element of the improvisation that cannot be captured in transcription. An accurate note-for-note recreation of that solo, will ultimately sound empty and lifeless, earning to capture that sense of immediacy when improvisation occurs has to be learned someplace else. So let's dig in deeper into the differences between composition and improvisation. And we can now return to Dan's reading from Derek Bailey's book. Now, it is, in my mind, a barn burner of a quote. Bailey is stating that in our current world of music education, which produces essentially all of our classical musicians, the learning of how to play an instrument and the learning to make music are two separate processes. In Bailey's view, it's the score, the written representation of a composition, that is at the center of this disconnect. The musical instrument is the medium, a statement no musician or scholar would contest. But it is the composer who is the music maker, not the musician. The author sums it up so brilliantly. Composers prefer the instrumentalist limit his contribution to providing the instrument, keeping it in tune, and being able to carry out any instructions which might be given to him. It was a very gender-specific quote. Reading this was like receiving a blow to my chest. Such a blunt critique of music history, Western music history, spanning hundreds of years, seems so presumptuous. And yet, given classical music's waning influence over the industry as a whole, perhaps it is a wise observation. Consider that the very first music created by humans was improvisation, a visceral reaction to the moment. Then consider that since its disappearance, purveyors of classical music have come to regard improvisation as a trivial exercise and a waste of time. This outrageous quote from Bailey seems to make light of the power of musical interpretation that the conductor and the solo and ensemble instrumentalists seem to hold. But then we remember those artists who have dared to interpret classical masterpieces in bold and innovative ways, and how often they are seen as outliers within the classical community. Perhaps we have forgotten something. Improvisation, in Bailey's eyes, restores this disconnect between music maker and the musician. The instrument is still the medium, but the instrumentalist becomes the music maker. Bailey, in preparation of his book, interviewed scores of musicians who improvise. He heard again and again the presence of this intense and personal relationship between instrument and instrumentalist. Classical musicians are renowned for complaining about their struggles with an inferior instrument that they own, especially if finances prevent them from acquiring a higher quality instrument that will respond better to their efforts. Now, truth be told, when it comes to improvisation, I never met a piano I didn't like. As a high school senior in Toronto, I once attended a party held at a friend's parents' summer home in Northern Ontario. There was this decrepit baby grand piano in the living room that years of neglect, non-tuning, and poor humidity control had ravaged. Broken strings and hammers, a defective damper system, a warped and cracked soundboard, the works. That piano had the most strangely wonderful array of tones and colors that I had ever heard, and it was ripe for the spontaneous picking. A friend told me that I had sat down at the piano and played it for 45 minutes straight. And then just got up and walked away. And then said there were kids around just going, I don't know, but it was an incredible experience. But set me in front of a keyboard when I need to prepare a classical piece, and I will pick a fight with that instrument. Perhaps I am missing something. Now, reading Derek Bailey's book certainly gave me a better understanding of music improvisation's nature, its history, and its place in today's music world. It helped to validate many of my intuitions regarding spontaneous music and my own musical journey. It has caused me to rethink how I teach music in my studio and in the rehearsal room. I have great concern over this disconnect between music making and the musician, and wonder how this chasm might be bridged. And I wonder what I might be able to contribute to this problem in my own small way. Reading Bailey's book also gave me a better understanding of my own place in the world at large. Viewing life as an unending improvisation is such a powerful metaphor that can give us some understanding as to why we live our lives the way we do. Reverend Wayne told us that just as in jazz improvisation, the way we engage with the rest of the world depends a great deal on how willing we are to work together, to hear each other out, as well as making sure that we are heard. This conversational model works well for building community. I would add that being present in the moment and conscious of the total environment of that moment makes it a better model still. Can there be a similar disconnect in how we live our lives that parallels the disconnection between music, musician and music making? Are we following some sort of societal score or unseen notation that threatens to undermine our roles as life makers? I think there is. Just as a composer's score dictates how a piece of music is to sound, there are social norms that can heavily influence the choices we make throughout our lives, especially the improvised choices. The power of these norms can be terrifying to behold. After all, they are everywhere in advertising, in our popular culture, and in our social media. Let me give you an example. As someone who is experienced in the navigation of online dating, I have to ask, why are there so many middle-aged women on these dating sites that want to meet a mate with a motorcycle? It's true. It's really true. I understand the need to recreate ourselves as we advance through our 40s and 50s. The kids are too soon grown and gone. We want to live again, to move beyond the staid roles of breadwinner and parent. We want to rebel. Why then do so many of us associate this need with buying hogs and leather chaps and wearing bandanas instead of motorcycle helmets? Why this, when there are so many other creative and more likely more satisfying ways to reinvent ourselves? There is a much darker side to this, of course. We all know it. There are other deeply seated social norms that cause us to hate and distrust. Where else would preoccupations with who uses what bathroom, who travels where, and what banner hangs outside our fellowship come from, but these norms created out of the fear of the other? And darker still, what a different score parents are following, who tell their children that they are beautiful and valued, from those parents who tell their children that they are ugly and stupid and worthless. How do these scores affect our children as they grow up and become adults? How do they affect our children's life choices, their abilities to be life makers? I think that we do run the risk of abdicating control to these norms and expectations at every turn, that we allow them to become the life makers. We allow them to become the life makers while we do what we are told, what is expected of us, what is beaten into us. An answer to this disconnection can perhaps be found in musical improvisation. If we truly work to acknowledge the time and place of every moment by being mindful of all the details that our senses pick up if we are present in that moment, and if we then interact within that moment honestly and with compassion without defaulting to our social norms and expectations, perhaps we can then reestablish ourselves as the life makers. The trick is to set aside the score handed to us again and again, and to see each moment of our lives with fresh new eyes and ears. If I may, I'd like to end with a delightful quote from the composer and improviser Frederick Rzewski, as he tells the story of running into Steve Lacy, another composer and improviser, and pressing Lacy in a rather unusual way for his opinion on the difference between the two arts of composition and improvisation. Rzewski says, "In 1968, I ran into Steve Lacy on the streets in Rome. I took out my pocket tape recorder and asked him to describe in 15 seconds the difference between composition and improvisation. And he answered, 'In 15 seconds, the difference between composition and improvisation is that composition, and in composition, you have all the time you want what you want to decide to say in 15 seconds, while in improvisation, you have 15 seconds. May we always be able to take the time to reflect when we have the time, and to be able to improvise in a manner that is mindful and compassionate when we have just 15 seconds. Thank you.